Hello.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for making some time today.
Oh, I'm happy to. It's great that you're doing this. I'm excited to be part of the project.
Well, I'm pleased to have you part of it also. Thank you so much. I was thinking back to when I saw you at Jose's gallery at your show. I don't know, how many years ago was that? A couple of years? 2017,
I think, so maybe 3 years.
3 years. But I remember it so vividly. I actually can walk through the gallery and see the work. It was such a magical moment for me and really special to have finally met you after such a long time. How have you been?
Well, it's been such an interesting time. I mean, I've been fine. You know, I live in a kind of rural environment, lots of nature, and so I feel very lucky to have, you know, had a lot of contact with nature in the last months. And I teach half-time at a college, so I didn't suffer some of the, you know, loss of work that many people suffered. So, you know, I've been lucky. It's hard. I have a 10-year-old child, so it's hard to have, you know, I think it's been quite hard on her, the social changes. And then it's, you know, it's really rethinking, for me, it's rethinking a lot about art and the role of art and what art can be and do. You know, it really feels like quite a cultural reckoning, like a big deal in our culture right now.
I like that phrase. I haven't heard anyone use that, but I think it's excellent. It is a cultural reckoning on so many levels. What have you deduced so far in terms of art?
I haven't had the impetus to make that I always have had. I've more had, you know, I am very much a maker, and I loved you know, kind of tinkering and playing with materials, and my art practice very much comes out of that experimental, you know, process in the studio, as well as a response to, you know, certain questions and problems of site-specific commissions and stuff like that. But in, you know, we had all of that quarantine time, and I didn't really feel like making. I didn't really feel like that need to tinker and experiment with materials, and I think it's because I felt more of a need to research and to read and to, you know, think. And so I do feel like, you know, I am just really thinking about what does the world need? What is needed right now? So there's, you know, I think that I'm having personally and artistically some degree of restructuring my priorities and, you know, what I want to be working about and talking about. And I think that, you know, as I feel like the culture is also restructuring. And I think that what I'm really interested in right now is healing, you know, different modalities, you know, thinking about art, like how can art be healing? That's a lot of what I'm thinking about.
Well, and it's a wonderful thing to explore with the kind of work you produce. You know, when I think about your use of sound, and I think I read somewhere where you said sound is the first experience in the womb.
Yes, and then the last experience when,
and,
you know, before you die, it's the last sense to go.
Uh-huh. So in the context of that and the notion of healing and that soothing and is seems so well suited for you
yeah,
to explore.
I definitely think that sound, I mean, that I have been thinking about that for a while with sound, like how do you, yeah, how sound can be a mechanism for healing, or, you know, that's a pretty broad term, but one of the things I've been exploring is, it's called entrainment, where you, like, the process of entrainment in physics is when you, like, for instance, if you strike a tuning fork at a certain frequency near a piano, and then the piano wires will also vibrate at that frequency. So it's almost like the material, it's called the material entrains to the frequency.
Mm.
And so I'm thinking about, you know, I'm thinking about sound. I mean, I had been working for years and years, I worked with sound as a kind of emotional medium, like a way to kind of transmit affect or transmit emotion. And I'm still, definitely still interested in that, but I'm also now really interested in sound as vibration and like kind of creating sound events or sound environments that make a vibration that people can entrain to.
Well, I mean, your work naturally requires some kind of direct engagement from the observer.
Yes.
So you see that as a natural transfer when they come upon whatever it is that you create through the sound.
Yes. I mean, and a lot of times with past works, I've relied on that kind of physical engagement. You know, a lot of my work, not necessarily the work you saw in that show at Jose's, but
mm-hmm.
other works that I have done have been physically interactive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you hold something or touch something, or put your head into something, or, you know, touch another person.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, so I have used, I guess, a physical engagement as a strategy, as a mechanism to get people involved. But that's definitely something that I have to rethink big time
mm-hmm.
right now. And
well, it's such a great challenge.
Ongoing. Maybe
mm-hmm.
I have to, like, really think about whether artwork can have that physical component anymore. I don't know. Yeah, it's a challenge. It's a challenge to think about how do I engage people in this very visceral way that isn't physical. Because I was always really interested in activating senses other than sight in the art process, you know, like, especially activating tactile senses. And that's hard to, you know, that is going to be a different kind of endeavor, I think, when things can't really be touched.
And we're feeling that right now. We're living through this. There's a numbness that has set over my senses. And, you know, part of it is the missing of touch, mm-hmm. personal touch. And those direct engagements that produce those strong feelings, emotional feelings. So I think the timing is extraordinary for thinking along these lines for you and how you can revive through your work or renew or bring back to life these deadened senses.
Yeah, and how to do it in a way that, like, it has to be done in a more subtle way,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
I always relied on the literality of, you know, the, like, I did rely a lot on literal touch.
Mm-hmm.
And so then how do you revive the tactile sense and yet not rely on that?
Mm-hmm. It makes me think of something I went through during this period of time. I'd been in New York for the Armory show, and when all of this began to kind of fall apart, and I found myself all of a sudden not wanting to engage with art. I had pushed it away.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there were other more pressing matters I had to contend with. And after a month or so at home, here isolated, I began to feel this irrelevance. Where's the meaning? You know, what am I? And I decided to go, allow myself to go back and just look at the collection, just go through it,
mm-hmm.
To allow myself to engage with art that way. Because that's what I was really missing in my life. And what I found in going through the collection was what you're talking about. I could feel and sense through the work, even though I was looking at it on the screen. And it prompted me to create this project, which I did on Instagram. Because what I was doing was, in going and looking through the collection, the drawings, I was experiencing them through the context of the pandemic and all that it had imposed on my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I found new meaning in a lot of the work as it spoke in some way, in some association with the experiences I was having during the pandemic time. So it wasn't direct, but yet it was. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think one thing that the pandemic did in an amazing way was open people. Oh, you know, like, it opened our senses, it opened
mm-hmm.
our hearts, it opened our perceptions in a way that, you know, in a kind of mass way,
mm-hmm.
that people were really open. So I feel like that, it's almost like you were very open, so you were able to experience that work on a whole nother level.
Exactly. And, you know, part of it is that we've had the time. We've shut out a lot of the noise that we've lived in day to day and the busyness, and I think have been able to be more present with ourselves.
Definitely. I think that's a really strong component. And then I think another component is the empathy, like the heart connection, I guess, or the heart opening to, you know, to other people suffering, and to, you know, or, you know, the news can be really rough to listen to or to read. I think that that's a component also. There's definitely the slowing down and the making space in people's really, you know, increasingly busy lives, but also the empathy and also the fear of also people recognizing their own mortality, their
mm-hmm.
own and others' mortality, and also the recognition of, you know, how really intertwined and dependent we are on one another. So I think all
and responsible
of things,
to each other
and responsible. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
the responsibility we have to, you know, all the other people on this planet. So I think all of those things took part in that kind of opening process.
Julian, I'd like to take you back to your early years.
Sure.
I'm curious to know how and when art entered your life.
Well, actually, I always had art in my life because my mom was an artist. She still is practicing. She still paints. And she was quite a innovative and adventurous conceptual painter in the, she did that before I was born. And when I was growing up, she was, had a very active career. And she did, you know, really ambitious, interesting projects with her painting. She did installations. She did these pilgrimages where she, you know, gathered earth from sacred sites and used it in painting. She would bury painting in our yard. You know, there was all tremendous amount of experimentation and process in her practice. And that's what I was growing up with. But when I was growing up, I really wanted the mom that made cookies. You know, I did not really appreciate that until quite a bit later, until I was an adult, really. But so initially, I kind of tried to distance from art. So I would say, when did art come into my life? It was always there, but it was a little bit of a, it wasn't something I appreciated necessarily. It was actually something that I competed with a little bit as a child.
Did your mother's work have some spiritual underpinnings?
Absolutely, yeah,
mm-hmm.
deeply.
Mm-hmm.
She explored spiritual systems in her work. And, but she was doing that in the 80s, which wasn't necessarily culturally receptive to that investigation at that time. I mean, now I think, now it's more timely. But yes, she was definitely doing that, those kind of investigations. And then I really, I tried not to do art, and even in college, I went to undergrad to study something else. I was going to study business, and I just really hated
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah, I went in to study
okay.
marketing, and I took, accounting classes, marketing classes, and I really did terribly in them, and I hated them. And then I sort of had a kind of rift or breakdown, where I just, wasn't happy in college. And then I started to take some art classes as a stress relief. And that, so my last 2 years of college, I took art classes and absolutely loved them.
When you were taking them to heal.
I was taking them to heal.
Interesting.
And also to, it was like a language I knew, whereas
mm-hmm.
the other, I just was not doing well with the other classes, and it wasn't a language I understood. The language of numbers, accounting, consumer, sales. I don't know. I mean, it was clearly something that I took as a kind of way to rebel or to distance from my upbringing, my upbringing was very esoteric and very artistic. And I think I just was trying to distance from that. But then, of course, when I started to take those art classes, it really felt like coming home. It felt
so
familiar
and comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So take me through this. How did you arrive at your artistry?
Well, the classes, I started my art education pretty late in undergrad. So I think I started my junior year is when I took my first art class, and it was a photography class. And so then I didn't end up doing a major. I didn't do an art major in college. I did like a, you know, general studies, humanities, and I took classes. I took poetry writing and a lot of poetry classes, and then some photography classes. And I really only took one sculpture class, which was a figure modeling class, a beginning level figure modeling. I never took any drawing or painting. So I left college with a, you know, a really avid interest in art, but not a lot of education, not a lot of, you know, foundation in classes. The last class I took in college that really was a jumping off point for me, and I think this, you know, the class that was sort of most instrumental in my choosing to become an artist was a photography class in bookmaking. So, you know, you put, you know, text and image in the form of these books. And I really found, you know, a language that I was very fluent with, you know, in putting those things together. And then I left college, and I still really was not committed to being an artist. I just felt like I couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't go on that path that my mom took. I just wasn't ready. So I went more into teaching. So when I moved right after undergrad, which was at University of Arizona, I moved to New York because I'd always, you know, I visited New York once when I was 19. My mom bought me a ticket to New York for my 19th birthday and sent me to go stay with her friend who lived on top of the Limelight Club in Chelsea.
You know it well.
90s. And it just, you know, going to New York at that time just really was so amazing for me. It was like something I'd never, again, something that felt so familiar, and then, but also something I'd never seen. So all I was kind of waiting for and saving up for was to move to New York. So right after undergrad, I moved to New York with, you know, two suitcases, and that's it, $500, two suitcases, and I really feel like being in New York was my, you know, my early art education. Just going to see shows and, you know, meeting other artists. And I was not an artist at that time, but I was working, doing art with kids. Like I worked with a group called Acorn doing murals in like low-income housing facilities, and then I worked with a group called LEAP, where I did a lot of work in shelters with moms and kids doing like crafts, art and crafts projects, and then also some art teaching in the public schools through LEAP. So that was my work, and then I was, of course, you know, seeing so much art in, you know, being in New York in my 20s, in the 90s, there was just so much to see and do. And then it was, I think, 99 that I decided that I wanted to, you know, I was kind of moving towards being an artist, and I always sort of had a, you know, some sort of studio practice, and meaning I was always making things. So first it was like a studio practice out of the trunk. Like I just had this trunk with materials and I would open it up and make things. And then I moved to an apartment that had an extra room, and it was like a shared studio between my roommate and myself. And then, you know, so it's always making things, but I hadn't really committed to this as a career path.
Were you using any of your photography at the time, making things?
No, I had not. Since I took that bookmaking class, I mm-hmm. really abandoned the photography, which was so, you know, kind of camera-based, and mm-hmm. really got much more interested in making objects.
And so in this trunk, what if I looked in that trunk, what would I see in that trunk?
I mean, I was a collector. I would, you know, scavenge flea markets and find, you know, old things, you know, sometimes things like wire and box and bits of porcelain sculptures that had broken off and, you know, like, I don't know, junk, really just junk. But I guess, you know, it was kind of a collage process. So I would just, you know, accumulate small, mostly miniature materials, and then, you know, organize them into boxes and then put them together. So I would say assemblage was that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what my first early sculptures looked like. And then, like late 90s, I decided to go to grad school. And it was going to be a decision between an MFA or a degree in art therapy. And I chose MFA. I can't remember why I chose MFA. It was like a very close, you know, call which programs I was going to apply to. But I chose MFA, applied to a few schools. I got into the Bard MFA program and also into a program called Skowhegan.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Skowhegan the summer of 99 and also got into Bard that year but deferred and went to Bard the following summer. But really those processes completely changed my life. Going to Skowhegan changed my life because that was really where I saw a pathway forward to be an artist in that program.
Can you elaborate? What was it that you, what opened your eyes, what opened your mind to that possibility?
Well, certainly it was meeting, you know, all of these other artists and mentors that I could see myself in. You know, when you meet people that are kind of like spirited, you sort of, it's like you see yourself in their path and it made something clearer to me.
Shows you possibilities.
Shows you possibilities, and mm-hmm. to see them following their path, it made it clear to me mm-hmm. that I could, you know, that I could do this, that there was value in this. Because also the other thing that Skowhegan really gave me was this an understanding of the social and conceptual possibilities for art.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I would definitely say that my mom's work was conceptual and spiritually based, I didn't really see, you know, I was not seeing the, you know, I was seeing art more as, I just didn't see those possibilities in it for myself. And then after Skowhegan, I was able to see that more.
It strikes me that you said you reached this crossroad where you were either going to go to art therapy or MFA. In so many ways, your work is therapeutic. It's as though you brought that idea along with you in your artistry.
I mean, thank you for noticing that and recognizing that, because that, I would say that is, you know, one of my primary endeavors is to bring, you know, bring some kind of altering experience to the viewer, to my viewers. I don't think I would have called it healing a while ago, although now it's more comfortable for me to embrace that term. I think in the past I used terms like presence, like building presence, or you know, kind of activating the senses, or you know, I use maybe different terminology for it, but there was always that kind of endeavor.
I must tell you, and I don't know if I discussed this with you when I saw you, but I went through a tumultuous period of time in my life about, I guess, 12 years ago. And I was doing a lot of reading and contemplating and therapeutic work, trying to make sense of the world and my life at the time. And I came upon your stretch drawings at a time when I began to identify my inner being, which had been lost in much of my life. And the stretch drawings just shouted at me. I mean, they pulled me in and they showed me what it was I was feeling and needed. They related directly to where I was emotionally at the time. In a very powerful way. They became like a metaphor, and it gave me the freedom that I was seeking to be who I was, and an acknowledgement of who I was through that work.
Well, hearing you, I just first have to thank you for voicing that, because I got chills when you said that, because of course that is always the endeavor, you know, that, I mean, for me to hear like that, something I made spoke to someone on such a deep level, in that it's like a conversation between souls, you know, it's like the ultimate, that is why I'm an artist, you know, that is what art can do. I've had that conversation with art that I've seen, and to hear that my art can do that, you know, to hear an experience where someone has felt that with something that's come from my soul, is really the most gratifying thing to me.
And isn't that the real meaning of art? I mean, certainly for me, as my focus on works on paper and drawing, it's always that connection. And, you know, I come at it intuitively. I let myself fully engage. And then I come back to find out what it is. But it is that connection. I connected to you through that work. Something you put in that work resonated with me and brought it all together. That's why I named my study program Syzygy. It's that, you know, that connecting, that space in between. And those are really powerful moments. And isn't that what art is really truly about, is the intention of you bringing your history and your life experiences to your work, and I bring that to my looking, and together we connect.
Absolutely. I think that is deeply... you know, that's the sort of deep power in art. There's a poet named Charles Olson, who I was reading. He writes poetry, but he wrote a book that is kind of about the poetic process. And it talked about the energy that is in the gesture, in the poet. So the poet feels, you know, the poet has emotion, the poet has experience, and then the poet puts the energy of that experience into the words, and then the words carry that energy to the reader, so that there is this, you know, to me, that's almost like a direct, well, he's talking about an energetic transmission, but I like to see it as almost like this physical transmission of energy, of material, of power.
And we go back to that energy transmission you were talking about, sound. Sound
yes.
is an energy, so it
yes.
comes right back to that.
Yes.
I'm gonna, do you know the name of that book?
It's Charles Olson. I will find it, and I'll find the name of
just
the book.
Just send it to me.
And
yeah.
I'll send it to you. It's not one of his poetry books, but it's a book where he's writing about the poetic process.
Well, I'm very interested in, I mean, this is one of the reasons I'm interested in drawing for that very reason. It's the hand. I need to feel the hand in the work somehow. And paper is such a great conduit for that. I want to ask you what role drawing plays in your practice and paper.
Well, drawing is interesting because I think that inadvertently, drawing is a foundation of my practice, and it's also a really foreign skill. So it's not something I never in my life took a drawing class. And, you know, if you asked me to draw, to render something, I could not do it. Like, I can't draw perspective. My husband is a really skilled drafts person as well. I mean, he's a sculptor too, but he has a foundational background, and I couldn't be farther from that. But I do feel like drawing, you know, I have a nanny, I don't know, like probably 30 of these sketchbooks that I've kept since like 93 or something. I've kept sketchbooks where I use drawing to kind of translate thoughts. So I always feel like drawing is sort of the mechanism to get the thought towards materialization.
I am very interested in that. I often tell students, I think putting pen to paper in some capacity, whether you're note-taking or doodling or draw, whatever it is, gives you access to the deeper regions of your brain where these ideas hold, and it allows them to come forth. I mean, I think when you have that kind of practice, you go to the page and something's going to come that you had no idea about.
Yeah. It is it's like a way to harness. It's a way to harness.
It's another good word. Mm-hmm.
The idea, the thought, which is a very, if you think about thoughts, ideas, they're so ephemeral. They're like smoke, you know, or ether. They're in the ether realm. And then the drawing is that, is the gesture from the hand through some kind of medium that marks on the paper. So, you know, there is this index, there's an index quality to that mark because it's, you know, an impression or a, you know, material left as a stain. But it's also a gestural. So like that combination of gestural and indexical, it's a materializing of that ether thing, which is the thought or the idea. Yeah, I think drawing is an amazing, like, sort of conduit, the first conduit for materialization. Mm-hmm. And I also use it, and even though I have no drawing history in my learning, in my academic learning, I use it deeply in my academic classes. Like, now I teach sculpture, and I always teach it through drawing. I require, you know, a sketchbook, and I require them to sketch every sculpture, every idea, even if it doesn't materialize into a sculpture, because it's such good practice to kind of link the head, heart, and the and material.
I also think in your practice where you're doing this, I don't know what you call it, drawing, journaling, whatever, I'm sure it's probably a combination of all of that. I enjoy, and I actually have journals I collect for the collection, because it lets me into your brain. You know, it gives me, to me, it's like a, gives me imagery from your thinking processes, which I find so valuable and interesting. And you can go back to those, you can go back 3 years ago and open a book and look at something that you've written that you'd totally forgotten about that you're applying today in your work. It's the mystery, you know, of how our mind works.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I tell students, that this sketchbook is an extension of your brain, and use it like that. And it's an amazing kind of log for the movements that your brain, you know, will go through this semester.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so with you on this. I also want to ask you about the subconscious.
Yeah.
Because I know that, I know that's a part of your work, or at least the awareness of the subconscious, and that also interests me.
Yes, I think that my interest in the subconscious is very much aligned with my, I would say beyond an interest, like more my need to explore the realm of things that is immaterial and give it a materialization. So, you know, that almost like forces that are not material that you can give materialization to. So that's why, you know, I've worked so much with sound and light and magnetism, which are these physical forces that also have a completely etheric or immaterial state. And the subconscious is related to that, but in the human psyche, in the emotional realm, you know, there's the conscious, which is what you kind of are aware of, or project to the world, you know, what you're aware of, what the world is aware of. And then there's the subconscious, which is our kind of depths of memory. And it could be, you know, it could be memory in this life. You know, I'm a person that believes in past lives. So sometimes I think that the memories are sort of stored. They could be past life memories, ancestral memories, but, you know, the subconscious is like the deep, deep part of the human psyche, like the mysteries of the psyche. And I think there's tremendous power in even just touching that in a person, tremendous power for you know, different ends. Like, I don't know if I have a way of saying that, like, touching that the subconscious can be healing. I think that would be presumptive to say, but I do think that when a person acknowledges their subconscious, that is, there's a kind of deep recognition there, and that, you know, there is something very powerful in that for people.
It's affirming your humanness.
Yeah, it's affirming your humanness and your, like, how deep that goes. mm-hmm. how deep that humanness goes. And also, you know, back to that soul connection, like back to like what a deep communication that is.
I have, through my own experiences collecting works on paper, and one example is the experience I had with yours, I've come to believe that in trusting my intuition, I'm allowing my subconscious to direct my aesthetic.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I'm reliving my whole life, not in chronological order, through the encounters I'm having with the art. I trust my intuition. Something's triggered. It's compelling. I know it's right and fits all the criteria. And then later, over time, when I see it, you know, within the context of how I move things around in the collection, I come to see what that relationship is. I don't see it right away. But it all stems from the subconscious, and, you know, the body has memory. I mean, it comes from so many places, and it's always powerful and affirming.
So that's amazing, Joanne, that you have learned, because that's an unlearning. In order to learn to do that, you had to unlearn, you know, what our culture has taught as the way to listen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that way of listening, it's kind of like listening not just through the body, but through the, through the subconscious. It's like, what is the subconscious? It's like the deep, deep emotional body, or, you know, some people might say the soul, or, you know, but it's listening through a different kind of mechanism that we are not generally taught to acknowledge. You know, it's like listening with a mechanism that isn't generally exercised.
I agree. I often refer to it as feeling with my eyes.
Yeah. Feeling with your eyes, and probably, I mean, the eyes are the way it comes in, but it probably resonates, you know, in your other places in your body.
Well, then
right?
It gets triggered, you know, I mean, there are times when what happens when I look that and I have that intuitive response through looking,
mm-hmm.
it triggers other senses.
Mm-hmm.
I can have a strong sense of smell. It can trigger a sense of taste. And it's not synesthesia in the truest sense of the word, but it takes my body to a particular sense because of some association. And my first experience with this happening, I was looking at a drawing of a drawing on butcher block paper, and it conjured up music in my mind. I almost could hear music. And I later found out that the artist and I shared, we both had life experiences with the pipe organ, and that was crazy. And that got me thinking, what's going on here? This is not happenstance. Something in her subconscious had her put that in that piece, and I found it.
Yeah,
so
that
started this whole investigation. But it was that experience. Other than that, up to that point, I was just collecting objects.
Really brings that, you know, it brings to the foreground this transmission, you know, this
yes.
idea of transmission, and transmission in a way that is definitely not language-based, and maybe, like, the material is the conduit for the transmission, but it isn't material, it's not about the material. The material just acts as a conduit. So that's a really interesting question, is what is that transmission process? And I think, you know, that circles back to many of the subjects we have touched on here.
Yeah.
Like, just,
And I realize that we're beyond the 45 minutes I promised you. I think we could probably talk for another hour. But I should conclude, I guess, here, sadly. Are you there?
Yeah.
Well, oh, okay.
I know. Yeah, I'm listening. I'm just,
I mean, there were so many more questions I wanted to ask you about your work, but maybe I'll need to plan a part two for our conversations into the winter, perhaps, and that, because this one will be submitted to my website in September.
Well, Joanne, I love talking to you. Wow. I do feel like we could talk another, you know, for
yeah, I do too,
for
too.
Numerous more conversations. I really appreciate your relationship to your to the work that you you know, the work that you respond to. You respond in such a deep way, and it's really exciting that you're furthering this language, like this deep, deep language that's not in words.
It's remarkable. I feel very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing and meeting the artists I meet and engaging with their work. It's added so much to my life, and these connections, you know, I feel like I'm kindred spirits with so many. And I remarked recently at an exhibition we had, 20 some artists were hung in the exhibition, and it's all abstract work, and I'd have found myself saying, you know, you're all looking at this abstract work, I'm looking at portraits, because each piece is a portrait of a human being I've connected mm-hmm. with in some way. And that's the beauty of it for me. And I felt that kindred spirit with you in the gallery that day with Jose. So
me
I really
too.
Wanted to
yeah.
be able to capture. And I must tell you, during this conversation, you've used certain words. You speak very poetically, and you've given me some more language, actual words to use in my talking about art. So I will make note of those for sure.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, I did feel like it was a very beautiful conversation we just had, and I hope to have more. I really hope to. I always wanted to know you more, because just in that very short time of conversing in the gallery, I really felt a connection, and so I hope that we will have opportunity to continue our conversations.
I certainly hope so, too, and I'm very grateful for your time today.
My pleasure, Joanne.
Continue thinking about this moment in time and how you will utilize it to communicate and to heal, and I hope that you're staying safe and comfortable and finding meaning in every day, and I'll look to connect with you again. You'll hear from me again. Probably this post will go up in September. I'm doing the next group of conversations. And I don't know if I explain, but I'll take some extracts and put them in a text on a page dedicated to you with an image of the work and then the full audio and then a link to your website and to your gallery.
Okay, wonderful. I'm really excited to see that.
I mean, this kind of conversation for graduate students is so valuable. And, you know, I see these as a replacement of studio visits, but I think it's good for students to hear artists speak about their work, to hear the language that they choose in speaking about their work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so,
it gives them insight into, you know, it's a lifelong investigation.
Yeah. Right.
It's an insight.
Right. So anyway, this has been a great contribution, or will be, and I'm grateful, and I wish you well, and I thank you again.
Thank you, Joanne. Mm-hmm. It was really a lovely experience, and boy, I sure did get chills when you talked about your recognition of the stretch drawing.
Well, I had the same chills, and they are very important works in my collection for the beauty of them and what they convey, but also they mark a specific moment, in transformative moment in my life. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I look forward to further conversations. So
yep, we'll keep it going.
Keep in touch.
Maybe okay. We'll do something together one day. I think we only there's such a sink here that it might be something we could do together.
I'd love to. Yeah,
great.
I would love
great.
To.
Great. Okay.
All
we'll
right.
explore that. Thank you. Have a good day.
Take care. Bye. Bye.